You're listening to The Daily Digestionalist with Matthew Heidmark at RadioArian.com.
Comrades, this is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and I'm here today with Sven Longshanks. Sven, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, Matt. It's been a beautiful day here over in Blighty. It's been a beautiful spring day. It's the first time we've had sunshine for a few days. Bit of a storm last night, maybe the tail end of the storm that you're having so many problems with. But yeah. Pretty good today, and we've got some good news to round the podcast off with, but I think maybe we should first talk a little bit about what's happening over there, over your side of the pond with Jeff Sessions. We were just discussing this just before we started, Matt. Do you want to say your thoughts on it first?
Sure. Well, you know, it's amazing that these Jews that, of course, work on both sides of the aisle, got Republicans and Democrats, both as corrupt as the day is long. Senator Jeff Sessions, when he was the senator from Alabama, he was on the Armed Services Committee. So the Armed Services Committee, of course, deals with the military. They deal with relations with foreign governments, pretty normal stuff. So now there's a huge hullabaloo. Oh, my goodness. It's been on every news channel, because this Russian conspiracy, I tell you what, that they will not let this go. Though I have not been able to square the circle on exactly how Trump can simultaneously be a closet Nazi and simultaneously be an agent of the Kremlin. Those things don't seem to add up, but we live in the age of political Orwellian doublethink, so they don't really think that far, in my assessment. But what has allegedly happened is that Senator Sessions, of course, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, as one of the highest ranking senators in the United States Senate, going ahead, and he supposedly had a conversation, again, a conversation with the Russian ambassador in the senator's office. So the ambassador came to Senator Sessions' office, which, of course, we know about because you check guests in. You know, it's an open-door policy. I even could hypothetically wander up into Washington, D.C., and try and see my senator or my representative. That's your right. And if you want to go get a tour of the Capitol or things like that, you actually go to your senator or representative's office, and you can request tickets. You can go in there. And if they're free, I mean, it doesn't really happen that often, but hypothetically, even as a private citizen, you can request a meeting. And if they're free, they might actually take it. That's kind of a normal thing that happens. You're supposed to have an open government. And of course, when our system was created, when it comes to private citizens, we had a much smaller population. So you actually could be more accountable to your constituents, and they really have a sort of open door policy. So normal stuff, right? The ambassador who's in Washington, Russian embassy is in Washington, goes to Sessions' office, in a meeting behind closed doors, but it was a publicly known meeting. That's one of the key things here, I think, to discuss issues. Now, what the left is saying, and of course, we have Senator Al Franken, who is a stand-up comedian, not exactly a statesman by any means, but he somehow wandered his way into being a senator from Minnesota. And John McCain and these other neocons are all saying that, oh, this is proof. This is proof that there is a deep Russian conspiracy, that Trump's team, every single person is a Kremlin agent, and they're all, we need to investigate the election even more. And, Senator Patrick Leahy has said several of the president-elect's nominees or senior advisors have Russian ties. Have you been in contact with anyone connected to any part of the Russian government about the 2016 election, either before or after Election Day? This is during Sessions' confirmation hearing. And Sessions responded, no. So what that means is, were they talking about the election either before or after? No, they probably had a million and one different conversations pertaining to his job as both a senator and on his position on the Armed Services Committee. So seems like a pretty open and shut case, but no, that is not enough for the neocons. That is not enough for the left. They are trying to take down Senator Sessions. And this is, Andrew Anglin said it, and I agree with it, this is a hill for us to die on, metaphorically, not literally. But Jeff Sessions is not a white nationalist. but he is dedicated to law and order. He's dedicated, you know, in a speech he gave talking about going ahead and focusing on arresting violent criminals, taking the killers off the streets, busting up the gangs, stopping the heroin trade from Mexico, and really having an actual attorney general that takes care of business, which is enforcing the laws of the country. And we all know as nationalists, all we need to win is the state to actually enforce the state's own laws. That if, you know, laws are, you know, being enforced, radical anti-fascists can't use terrorism and violence and weapons and things like that to try and shut down our freedom of speech or freedom of assembly. They will go to prison because they're violating the law. We don't need them to be on our side if they just, you know, Jeff Sessions is a strong constitutionalist. He's a strong conservative. That does not put him in our camp, but it does make him a man that seems to be driven pretty much entirely by conviction to what he thinks is right. And if that means upholding the First Amendment, if that means upholding the Second Amendment and all the other rights of American citizens, that is great for us, and that's great for all normal, everyday Americans, that the left will not be allowed to, or Black Lives Matter, or any of these other Jewish front groups, won't be allowed to run over and try and bulldoze normal white people in America. And he's going to be focusing on getting the illegals out, busting up these crime gangs. You know, you look at what Trump said about going into Chicago. You know, he might be able, you know, with Jeff Sessions at the leadership, might be able to help stop the crime wave that's happening in Chicago, where we've got over 1,000 people being killed a year. All these horrific things in America's cities that are funded by the drugs that are flowing from the southern border through these cartel gangs that are bringing people in and are hurting Americans. I mean, all this is tied up together. Immigration, crime, our movement. This is a big deal that Jeff Sessions is a man that wants to enforce the law. So that's why they got to get rid of him. That the system only works if they say one thing and do the exact opposite. If the system actually lives up to its principles and following and enforcing the laws, then the left loses a tremendous amount of its power because they are built on violence and terrorism and thuggery. That is what the left is built on. And our positions of being able to take care of our families, peacefully and politically advocate for our positions, they can't stand that. They want to talk about freedom while they restrict freedom at every single go. That is the left's calling card. So this is a huge deal. We need to make sure that Senator Sessions, or I guess Attorney General Sessions, stays in office and these leftist attacks are pushed back. And this means mobilizing the full capacity of our social media presence, of getting engaged, of protesting if need be, because they're trying to take him out because they're trying to isolate Trump. They're trying to cut Trump off from all of his allies. You know, Senator Sessions, when he was Senator Sessions, was the first senator to endorse Trump on the position of immigration. So this is a guy we need to be working in his position. This is such an important thing. And these leftists are revealing themselves. These Jewish mischief makers are revealing themselves by getting these cucked Republicans and these Democrats to come out against him. We need to be, fighting this battle to ensure that he stays in his position and the Trump administration can get stronger through this. And hopefully that means, again, the laws are enforced, the immigration laws move forward, and things become a lot safer for everyday Americans of all colors. So that's my initial thoughts, but I'd love to hear your take.
Well, it's just the impression that I get is that he must be a really good guy, because they've been after him for so long now that they were saying that he was racist, he supported the Ku Klux Klan, and then they stood in the way, and he wasn't actually made into Attorney General until last week, I believe it was, a month after Donald Trump had actually been sworn in to office. The Democrats were still making a fuss and trying to prevent him from actually getting in, and now that he is finally in, they bring up these tenuous links to Russia. And of course the guy is going to have had dealings with Russia. He was a senator. Of course he's going to have dealings with the Russian ambassador. And I believe he has his integrity. I mean, he's speaking the truth. He says that he hasn't had any discussions with them, only as a senator, not as somebody that was taking part in Trump's campaign. So he's got to be a good guy for the left to be all lined up against him in the way that they are. And I find it, the really good thing about this is that he's standing for law and order, like you're saying, Matt, and what he's talking about doing is enforcing the law and preventing immigration just simply by enforcing the laws that are already there. Now, the problem we have over here in Britain at the moment, we don't have the police to enforce the laws. The police watchdog have come out and said that the police force in Britain is in crisis. We've got 46,000 murderers and rapists on the loose in the country. We've got a chief of police that deals with child abuse saying that low-level paedophiles shouldn't be jailed. Low-level paedophiles shouldn't be jailed. They should just be allowed to roam the streets. And the reason for him saying this is because our jails are overcrowded. Now, the simple solution to this, we should have capital punishment. Paedophiles should be executed. They've committed a crime that is beyond all other crimes, destroying the innocence of a child. That can never be brought back again. They've ruined that child's life. They should be executed for that. And that would make a little bit more room in our jails. And they're saying that we now have so much crime, so much violent crime, that the police aren't properly investigating these. One in five, they are not investigating, and they're marking down calls where they should go out to investigate. They're marking them down as lower level crimes because they just cannot cope with all the crime. And the reason for all this crime is because of all the immigration. About 20% of at least of the prisons are filled with foreigners. In some cases, it's 60% in places in London. London itself is 60% foreign. We've got huge problems with Muslims. We've got some jails that have just been taken over entirely by Islamists who intimidate the other people in prison into becoming Muslim. We had one young lad that put a piece of bacon on a mosque door. He was sent to prison and he died in prison. And we still don't know how that happened. It could very well have been that it was the Muslims in the prison that got to him. And the simple solution to all of this, to solve the policing crisis, is just to prevent immigration, prevent any more immigration, secure the borders, which is what Donald Trump is trying to do over there in America, secure the borders, and then deal with the ones that we have already got here. And then we would have enough police to cope. But instead of saying that, they're saying, oh, the police haven't got enough money. The police haven't got enough money. So once again, they're blaming the white man for this. They're saying the white man hasn't paid enough in taxes to keep the police going to deal with all this crime. But Britain used to be the envy of the rest of the world because it had such a low crime rate. If you go back 100 years, there was hardly any crime in the country. And all this sudden explosion in violent crime has come about after the Second World War, after the mass invasion of the country. And just in the last 10 years, we've seen a huge increase, especially in knife crime in London, which is the main one. It's more than a few knife crimes seem to happen every day just in London. And you used to get a knife crime in this country about one or two a year, if you go back to the turn of the century. All of this has been brought about through immigration. We don't have enough police to cope. Can you imagine that, Matt? You have so much crime in a country that the police say, well, we're going to have to stop jailing pedophiles. We're going to have to stop jailing low-level pedophiles.
I mean, it's absolutely just proof of the degradation of a society. I mean, where you see the rise in crime in every single European country, you know, as mass immigration is coming through. This is what drives it. And of course, things that happen simultaneously, you know, as we've talked about on the show before, that within Arab countries, there are very strict punishments for these sorts of things. So, you know, if you are a thief and you live in a majority Arab country or things like that, you will be dealt with harshly. And guess what? Thievery isn't as much of a problem. You know, I've got buddies that served in Iraq and Afghanistan and been deployed overseas for many, many years, because of course our soldiers are sent time after time after time, you know, in these wars and these occupations. And they tell me that things are pretty on the level. You do not get away with a lie. You've got to be a very bold individual to go ahead and be committing crime, because especially in the tribal societies over there, if you're, you know, you go ahead and if you hurt someone's daughter or something like that, you steal from someone. If the state doesn't get to you, the tribe's going to get to you. That's Hatfield and McCoy territory right there when it comes to a blood feud between tribal groups. And you can pretty easily end up dead. You know, that's the way society is always run. And us in the West, we of course then had the state. The state is a more centralized power. It's supposed to ensure justice and safety and security for everyone. And what we've got is the worst of all worlds within our society, because we're bringing in people. We're telling them essentially the laws don't matter. We're not, you know, we haven't raised up strong families and strong community bonds that would then enforce the law in any sort of capacity. And we're just letting people run around and do whatever they want. And when it comes to the prison system, we also see, like in the United States, one of the big issues that I have is there is no rehabilitation and many of our prisons have been turned into private prisons. So actually there's corporations making money, a bounty, on each person that's in. So we've got the bizarre situation where it's more profitable, of course, because they're less dangerous, mass jail millions of people on low-level nonviolent drug offenses. So you've got some, you know, college kid that has a joint on him. We'll throw him in prison for 5 years for that. But you really don't want to deal with these more violent offenders unless you absolutely have to. So you can get more jail time for a nonviolent drug offense than you could for actually being a violent murderer in some cases. It's a very, very bizarre system that's been erected. And it's because there's money. There's money and control and the degradation of our society. This takes the problem of the state, the problem of the family, the problem of the community, and open borders only exacerbates this problem. That crime is getting worse in all of these countries. And we know that even when they try and hide the statistics from the people, you know, like that police officer recently got a whole lot of flack and is currently being investigated in Sweden for bringing up that there's a special classification code for when migrants commit crimes, because the Swedish people would absolutely you know, lose their minds if they knew the actual level of crime that the people were facing. So there are a lot of different factors here, but it just goes to show the degradation of society that's happening under multiculturalism, where people are suffering, the state is doing nothing about it, and you know, they're making the problem worse by importing more and more people that shouldn't be here in the first place. So we need a radical change to our society. Because this is just going to keep getting worse. And letting low-level pedophiles on the streets is just one symptom of a very, very sick system.
Well, while they're letting the pedophiles on the streets, they've got people like Joshua Bonehill locked up for 4.5 years. They've got people like Lawrence Burns, who's been on remand for the last 3 months, who's looking at a long sentence when they finally give him a sentence. They're more interested in silencing the people that are actually speaking up about these problems and pointing to the real source of these problems. We were talking yesterday about Marine Le Pen and how the European Union Parliament were talking about removing her parliamentary immunity against what she says. Well, they've done that today so that they can try and prosecute her for speaking out against the crimes that ISIS commit. So if anybody does speak out, they try to silence them. So the people that are actually trying to solve this problem, that are pointing out the source of the problem, trying to do something about it, people just don't want to hear. And part of the reason why the people don't want to hear is the problems that we have in our universities. There's another study that's been produced today here in Britain, and they're saying that 8 in 10 lecturers are left-wing and have a left-wing bias, and how this is preventing free speech from occurring in our universities. And it's not just that's preventing free speech in our universities. This new anti-Semitism law that we have in Britain, it's supposed to be Palestine week this week, but none of the Palestine organisations are allowed to speak in any of the universities, because all the universities are terrified that if they allow any pro-Palestinian to speak in there, then they'll fall foul of this new legislation, which says that anyone that criticises Israel is an anti-Semite, and the Jews can say whoever they like is an anti-Semite. It doesn't actually have to have been anything nasty that they said about Jews. It's just whatever the Jews decide it. So a combination of that and all these left-wing professors that they have in these universities, these biased professors, means that the people that come out from there have never ever heard any of our politics. They've just been told that our politics is fascist, our politics is bad, we hate people, we want to kill all the blacks, we want to kill all the Jews. And that's all they think. So when they hear that people like Marine Le Pen is being silenced, they think, oh, that's wonderful. We don't want to give Nazis a platform. And when they hear that the police are struggling and they've got 46,000 criminals on the loose, they say, oh, well, we should be taxing the rich more to pay for more police. It can't possibly be anything to do with immigration, because we've been told immigration is such a wonderful thing. So these are the sources of the problem. As you say, Matt, it's not just one problem. It's a whole host of problems. It's a whole system. It's a whole system that we have that needs tearing down. And that's what we hope to do. That's what this podcast is about. That's what the whole movement is about, is encouraging the breaking down of this corrupt, defunct system that's been forced upon us, that is not a white system. It's not a white system. All the ideas behind it can be seen to have originated from Jews. We want to tear this down, and we want to put a white system in place, and a white system based on natural law, which will be just like National Socialism, because National Socialism was based on natural law. Now, I know we're wandering a little bit off topic here, Matt. I know you wanted to bring up what's happening in Sweden with conscription. Do you want to comment on what I've said, or do you want to move on to that?
Well, there's so much to cover, but, you know, you are 100% hitting the nail on the head. And of course, you know, again, they are moving, hire more police, get more police, get more money for programs. How about just don't bring people in that are doing these crimes? That seems like a lot easier of a situation, considering we have so many veterans that are homeless. We have so many mothers that can't, you know, figure out how to feed their children. There's so many problems that our society is facing. The idea of keep bringing these people in that cost our society money and commit crimes, but even if they were just costing money, we don't have enough to take care of our own people. It's absolutely ludicrous, the system that's being promoted. It's absolutely an anti-white system. But, on to our next topic, something very interesting is Sweden. Looks like it's reintroducing conscription. If you were born after 1999, they want to start starting up conscription. Now, of course, they're doing it under the auspices of being anti-Russian. That's the big focus. Russia took Crimea in a democratic election where over 90% of the population voted to rejoin Russia, considering they're ethnic Russians who speak Russian or Russian Orthodox, but that's really secondary to these people. But I think this could be a good opportunity if more men, and you know, they're also conscripting women, but if more men, especially in Sweden, go through even a basic level of conscription, which teaches them in the military duty and honor, responsibility, and gives them military training, this could have unintended consequences that the Swedish state doesn't want, of bringing more people to the right, cultivating that masculine spirit of the warrior is a very important thing for a society. So we'll have to see what happens. But, I think that could be a good first step.
Well, I think that's one of the major differences between Sweden and Finland. If you think you've got Finland really close by, but Finland still has national conscription. So all the Finns have to go and join the army for 3 years, learn how to use guns, learn about how much they love their country, prepared to die for their country. And then you see things like the Suomi Maidan that they've had over there. I think it's for the last 3 weeks now, you've had nationalists that are camped out in the cold that are saying they're not going to move until the asylum seekers that have been refused asylum are all deported. So that's the sort of mettle that you've got amongst the Finland people. And in Sweden, they protest. The Nordic resistance movement are fantastic. But just the general way of doing things, the Nordic resistance movement only make up a very small portion of the people over there. In Finland, you've got a much more nationalistic, patriotic spirit. And I think that does come from the conscription. I wish we could still have conscription in Britain, because that is one surefire way to inspire patriotism among young people. I know there are problems with the Swedish army. They allow women in there, transsexuals in there. They allow mixed bunks or mixed bunk houses. So you've got women sleeping in the same room as men. But at least you've still got a military style of discipline, which is going to improve the outlook all around for the young Swedish men. It's a shame that they're saying that this is because of fears of Russia. I'm not sure what they think Russia is going to do or what Russia wants to do with Sweden. Sweden was never a part of the Soviet Union. Finland was sort of on the borders, but Finland wasn't a part of the Soviet Union either. I imagine they're saying this just because of the Baltic countries who previously were a part of the Soviet Union. But Putin doesn't seem to have any wish to invade. I know he likes the idea of the empire, the Russian Empire, the Russian Federation, but not in a Soviet way, not as in running everything for other countries and taking away their sovereignty. Putin talks a lot about a multipolar world with national sovereignty and countries deciding what's in their own best interests rather than having one big new world order telling them what to do. I mean, he's quite big on that. So I don't really see where their idea is coming from, that there's this big Russian threat. But it's definitely positive that they've got national conscription coming up. I've also heard some positive things from Hungary this week. Viktor Orban has spoken up. He's made a speech and he said that it is absolutely vital to preserve ethnic homogeneity for a country's success and to stop immigration. I mean, that is a fantastic thing for a head of a country to say, a head of a nation in Europe to say. And he's really laying it on the line there. Ethnic homogeneity is absolutely vital for a country's success, vital to make the country worth visiting, vital for the country's economic success, vital for to preserve the culture, vital just to preserve the charity that you have among people. One of the biggest problems we have with multiculturalism is that people no longer want to help the other people around them. They fear the other people around them because they can't understand what they're saying. They don't have the same civilities as these other races, and they just end up staying at home watching the television. There's a huge UN study that showed this. So Viktor Orban is hitting the nail right on the head here by saying this. Ethnic homogeneity is absolutely vital and immigration must end. And no wonder to see that he was one of the first politicians to congratulate Donald Trump on winning the presidency in America. So again, Viktor Orban is somebody that just keeps continuing to impress me. I'm sure he must be impressing you too as well, Matt.
Well, exactly. And, you know, the thing about Orban, and this is the important role that nationalists have of driving the conversation to the right. Now, Jobbik, unfortunately, you know, in Hungary has, you know, there are still so many dedicated, amazing people in it, but they've kind of moved on some of their more stringent positions in recent years, which I think is very depressing. But it does happen. But, you know, the conservatives under Orban have been forced to move to the right. They've been forced to accept more nationalist positions, or else Jobbik, with this growing nationalist sentiment, likely would have become the number one party. So nationalists, if we hold the line, if two are right, the only thing that there is a wall. There is no more space for us to go on the right. You know, eventually you start having these politicians who are moving farther and farther in our direction, because people come to realize that true nationalism is the only answer for our society. It's the only answer to make sure that our people and our culture and our faith have the ability to survive and thrive and be cultivated. So, you know, it's great to be able to see. Hopefully he keeps moving to the right. You know, I don't think he's necessarily one of us, again, like most of the world leaders, but if he's definitely moving in our direction, that is such a great thing. And he's introducing what the Hungarian people want. Because if you think, if the conservatives are saying things like that, the average Hungarian, I've got Hungarian friends and friends of mine who are Americans that live in Hungary, the average Hungarian is far more to the right than Viktor Orban. So he is as to the left as possible, but as the nationalist sentiment grows, he's forced to move farther and farther in our direction. So that's one of our big positions, is being able to push people in the right direction and to be able to win the hearts and minds of the people, because then even the politicians are eventually going to have to start sounding a heck of a lot like us. You know, Orban building the border wall to be able to keep out the migrants, you know, starting these deportation teams, doing all this stuff. That wouldn't have happened if nationalists in Hungary hadn't been agitating for decades to go ahead and push along these positions. So, you know, I want to do another bit of good news from Virginia, and also this goes to West Virginia and Kentucky, that it looks like the beginning of a revival of the coal economy is happening, thanks to Donald Trump. Now, you know, I am a big supporter of green energy. I want to be able to see our economy transition over the next few decades into a fully sustainable economy that's good for the environment, it's good for the people. But for now, especially these hard-hit areas of Appalachia need jobs, they need opportunities. And, you know, I'm reading an article on Fox News that says, trucks are running again. Miners are working 7 days a week and cannot keep up with current demand. Coal mines, long dormant after the industry's collapse, are now buzzing again with ant-like activity. We load coal every day for the power plant in Virginia City, explained Rick, a longtime supervisor for a major operation who did not want to give his last name. There's one shipment a week to Georgia Power and one for Tennessee Eastman. And over the past month, there's been a resurgence in the coal industry that once formed the backbone of the region's economy. And locals credit President Trump's aggressive pro-energy agenda. So being energy independent, of course, is a very important thing for a nation. And it looks like he's fulfilling another one of his promises to get people back to work. Now, we have to have a long-term plan. Coal is not a sustainable economy for generations to come. But we need to get people back to work. We need to have cheap energy that encourages economic growth and then invest some of those profits into transferring our economy to more sustainable things. But again, another fulfilled campaign promise. It's making lives better. People are getting hired for good paying coal jobs. This is another exciting thing. So, Sven, as we're coming to the end, I'll turn it back to you for your thoughts on that. But also we'll go ahead and get our final thought while we're at it.
Well, it's great to hear that the coal industry is being revived over there in America, and it's great to hear that he's keeping his campaign promises. And I've got a final bit of good news here about Brexit. People this week were very worried to hear that the House of Lords had thrown this bill back at the House of Commons, saying that Theresa May had to guarantee European citizens' rights in Britain, when Theresa May wanted to make sure that the European countries were going to guarantee British citizens' rights in their countries. So people were a little bit worried about that, but she's come out and said 2 weeks and she's going to trigger Article 50 anyway. So in 2 weeks' time, we should have the first stages of Brexit started, which means that the negotiations will start regardless of what the House of Lords do. She's still going to activate Article 50 anyway, which is what everybody's been wanting since the referendum last year in June. But that's just I think that's a very positive thing that we can end the podcast on today. 2 weeks to Brexit.
Well, it's such an exciting thing, Sven. I mean, things are getting better for our people. Our movement's growing. And of course, remember the Senator or the Attorney General Sessions issue. We need to stay on this. We need to stay energized. Remember, just because things are getting a little better, we are a long way from final victory. So we got to keep it up. We got to keep the fires rolling. And it's such a great thing. I love it. So thank you, Sven. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you to my listeners. And I'm going to be looking back or looking forward to tomorrow for us closing out the week for another great week of the Daily Traditionalist. So I hope everyone has a great day and hail victory.
You've been tuned into the Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioArea.com.